This is the RTE News at 1 with Brian Dobson. Good afternoon. The headlines this Thursday lunchtime. A convicted Garda killer has admitted perverting the course of justice during his murder trial by playing the recording of a witness being interviewed by Gardaí. The United States has vowed to support Israel amid fears of a threatened revenge attack by Iran. And Ukraine says the need for more air defences is critical after further Russian bombardment of energy infrastructure. The news in detail now with Brian Jennings.
The US military commander for the Middle East is reportedly heading for Israel to discuss intelligence that Iran could be about to strike Israel in retaliation for the bombing of its consulate in Syria. US President Joe Biden had earlier promised ironclad support for Israel amid fears of a reprisal threat. Our correspondent Fiona Mitchell.
Despite public criticism of Israel's Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu and how he is conducting the war in Gaza, the US President Joe Biden vowed to stand firm with his support of Israel in the face of a threatened significant attack on the country from Iran. US officials have voiced alarm over the prospect of an imminent strike against Israeli interests after an airstrike earlier this month on Iran's consulate in the Syrian capital Damascus destroyed the building and killed seven members of Iran's elite Revolutionary Guards. Iran and Syria both blame Israel for the strike, with Iran's supreme leader Ayatollah Ali Khamenei warning in a speech that what he called the evil regime of Israel must and will be punished. As tensions in the region rise, German airline Lufthansa announced it had suspended flights to and from Tehran, saying it was due to the current situation in the Middle East, as Russia also warned its citizens about travel to the region.
A convicted Garda killer has admitted perverting the course of justice during his murder trial by playing the recording of a witness being interviewed by Gardaí. Aaron Brady, who's serving life with a minimum of 40 years for the murder of Detective Garda Adrian Donoghue 11 years ago, pleaded guilty to the offence at the Special Criminal Court today. A second charge of conspiring to persuade another prosecution witness not to give evidence in the case has been taken into account. The 33-year-old from New Road Crossmaglen in South Armagh failed in an application to have reporting restrictions imposed. The Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky has said Ukraine's need for more air defences is critical after further Russian bombardment of energy infrastructure overnight. The grid operator reported damage in five regions. A power plant outside Kyiv has been badly hit. The Ukrainian Air Force indicated that nearly a third of around 80 Russian drones and missiles had not been shot down. One of the main organizations supporting people with Parkinson's disease has said it may have to cut services due to funding pressures. Parkinson's Ireland said it gets €70,000 a year from the government, significantly less than comparable charities. A study today from UCC for World Parkinson's Day shows long waiting lists for a diagnosis of the illness. Our health correspondent Fergal Bowers.
15,000 people have Parkinson's disease, and it is the fastest growing neurological condition, which currently has no cure. The numbers are set to double by 2040 due to increased life expectancy. One of the main organisations supporting people with Parkinson's disease has said it may have to cut services due to funding pressures. Parkinson's Ireland said it gets just €70,000 a year from the government, significantly less than comparable charities. A study today from UCC for World Parkinson's Day shows long waiting lists for a diagnosis of the disease. The HSE said it funds a range of community services and supports for people through acute and primary care. It said it has received a number of business cases from Parkinson's Ireland for funding to be considered.
New figures from the Central Statistics Office show that the annual rate of inflation slowed to 2.9% in March, down from a rate of 3.4% in February. March marked the fifth consecutive month where the inflation rate was lower than 5%. The Governing Council of the European Central Bank is meeting in Frankfurt this lunchtime to consider whether to make any changes to interest rates. Markets are not anticipating any alterations at this point, despite steady falls in Eurozone inflation. However, analysts do expect that the ECB will begin trimming rates back from their record highs at its following meeting. Hospices have received the highest positive ratings in a survey of bereaved people regarding end-of-life care settings. The survey was conducted following a recommendation by the COVID-19 Nursing Homes Expert Panel. While most participants had confidence and trust in healthcare staff, several areas of improvement were identified. Our social affairs correspondent, Alva Keneally.
4,570 people who registered the death of a family member or friend between September and December 2022 took part in this national survey jointly conducted by HICWA, the HSE and the Department of Health. It found positive experiences across several areas of end-of-life care at settings like hospitals, nursing homes and residential care settings, but hospices received the most positive ratings across all survey questions. Areas of improvement were identified. Some participants felt there was a lack of coordination between healthcare staff during the last 2 days of their relative or friend's life, and some felt that their relative or friend didn't get help from healthcare staff as soon as they needed it. The HSE has said it'll use the survey findings to inform the development of quality improvement plans at national and local levels.
Now the weather.
RTE Radio 1 Weather with Grant. Building a new home? Trust Grant to help you on your heating journey with their home heating design service. Visit grant.ie.
Some bright or sunny intervals for a time this afternoon. Over the northern half of the country, rain in Munster and South Leinster will gradually spread northeastwards during the afternoon and evening. Highest temperatures, 13 to 16 or 17 degrees with moderate southerly winds. Brian.
Thank you, Brian. Still to come this lunchtime, the United States warns of a possible significant attack on Israel by Iran, with President Biden promising ironclad support for its Middle East ally. The view from within Israel on how the war in Gaza is affecting U.S.-Israeli relations. More from the trial of Garda murderer Aaron Brady, who's pleaded guilty to perverting the course of justice. Sinn Féin accuses the government of underfunding cancer services after the Irish Cancer Society says patients' lives are being put at risk. And inflation eases again. Prices rose 2.9% in the 12 months to March.
Surge in demand for credit union farming loans. Cultivate Credit Union farm loan applications have doubled in just 2 years to over 50 million euro. Whether you need a stocking loan, finance for a farm building, a tractor or a TAMS loan, we're here to help. Visit your local Cultivate Credit Union today as part of National Cultivate Week to find out more about our personal service, quick loan approval and competitive rates. Cultivate, for farmer-friendly finance from your local credit union. Loans are subject to approval. Terms and conditions apply. The cost of your repayments may increase. If you do not meet the repayments on your loan, your account will go into arrears. This may affect your credit rating, which may limit your ability to access credit in the future. Credit unions in Ireland are regulated by the Central Bank of Ireland.
The online portal for school transport for the 2024-25 school year is now open for new applications. All new applicants must apply before the 26th of April. A late application could mean that a ticket is not available for your child. Ticket prices remain the same as last year. To apply and see details of eligibility, go to busairin.ie/schooltransport, an initiative of the Government of Ireland.
Hello again, you're listening to the news at 1. US President Joe Biden has promised ironclad support for Israel amid fears of what America says could be a significant attack on Israel. The threat comes following an airstrike on the Iranian consulate in Damascus last week, in which 7 people died, including 2 Iranian Revolutionary Guard generals. Iran has blamed Israel for the strike and threatened revenge. The president's comments come just a day after Mr. Biden called for a ceasefire in Gaza and said he disagreed with Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's war strategy.
We also want to address the Iranian threat to launch a significant, they're threatening to launch a significant attack on Israel. As I told Prime Minister Netanyahu, Our commitment to Israel's security against these threats from Iran and its proxies is ironclad. Let me say it again, ironclad. We're going to do all we can to protect Israel's security.
Meanwhile, Israel's foreign ministry has sharply criticised Taoiseach Simon Harris for not mentioning the hostages held by militants in Gaza during his speech to the Dáil on Tuesday. In a statement, it also criticised Ireland's intention to recognise a Palestinian state and to join South Africa's case against Israel at the International Court of Justice. We're joined now by Dr. Gershon Baskin, Middle East Director of the International Communities Organisation and a former peace negotiator with Hamas. Dr. Baskin, thanks for taking our call. You're very welcome to the News at One. Can I ask you first of all, to give us your assessment of what's going on now in terms of US-Israeli relations? Because there seems to be some very mixed messages.
Well, it seems there's a clear divide between Prime Minister Netanyahu and President Biden. Netanyahu is not listening to President Biden, not taking the advice of the Americans with regard to a ceasefire. I note that Israel did withdraw most of its troops from Gaza and has allowed to double the amount of humanitarian aid going into Gaza over the last days at the demands of the United States. But a promise that Mr. Netanyahu made to President Biden of opening up the Israeli port of Ashdod for humanitarian aid hasn't yet happened. And of course, the call for immediate ceasefire is not being observed by Israel. It seems to me, looking at Israeli internal politics, that Netanyahu is trying to appeal to his base, which he lost most of it or half of it since the beginning of the war, since the failure of October 7th. And he clearly knows that his base supports Donald Trump a lot more than they support Joe Biden.
This promise from Joe Biden of ironclad support from Israel, the context of this, of course, is perhaps a threatened attack by Iran in retaliation for that strike on Damascus last week. But it also comes in the context of senior members of the Democratic Party in Washington saying that the U.S. government should be considering withholding some of its practical military support for Israel.
I think that in fact could happen. I think that the U.S. might tell Israel that we are not going to send any more bombs for you to drop on Gaza. If you are attacked by Iran, we have your back. We'll be there to help you. But the United States wants the war in Gaza to come to a close and is demanding from the Israelis to put forward some kind of political plan that would have a positive outcome for everyone in the region at the end of this war. Because until now, the Israeli government under Netanyahu refuses to deal with the political side of how to end the war and how to defeat Hamas.
So what then of the prospects for the latest round of talks in Cairo? The U.S. is sending the head of the CIA, William Burns, to those negotiations. Are they at all likely to bear fruit, do you think?
They don't look very good now. Hamas has ultimate demands that they're calling for the end of the war and a withdrawal of all Israeli troops and other items that are difficult for Israel to accept. And the Israelis are looking for a partial deal for the return of some 40 hostages, a partial ceasefire for a 6-week period of time and not the ultimate deal. That would leave Hamas in power in Gaza. That's what Israel wants to avoid. It is important that the head of the CIA is weighing in here, because then Netanyahu has, and Hamas for that matter, have no excuse but to send their negotiating teams to Cairo or to Doha or to wherever they might take place. Without the pressure of the United States, it's doubtful at this point, I think, that Netanyahu would send the top level of his negotiators to those talks. And as long as the talks are going on, we have reason to hope that something positive might come out from them, although the chances don't look very good right now.
There is, of course, an analysis that Prime Minister Netanyahu will continue this war in order for him to remain in office. Now, is that does that hold a gem of truth, or is that oversimplistic?
It sure looks that way to a lot of people in Israel who, for a long time, want Netanyahu out of office, and particularly since the failures of October 7th. And the crowds are growing in Israel, calling for new elections, although the majority still want them to be held after the war. Only no one knows when after the war is. And a lot of analysts are saying that Netanyahu has an interest in prolonging the war in order to avoid the commission of inquiry that will be established after the war to determine who's responsible and why, and also to delay elections as long as possible.
Just a final question, if I might, Gershon, in relation to the Irish government saying now it's its intention to recognise a Palestinian state. A number of other EU countries appear to be moving in that direction. Others we know are very unlikely to do so. How is that viewed in Israel and within the Israeli government?
I'm quite frankly, I don't think you have to be concerned with how it's viewed in Israel, because Ireland and other countries in the OECD and the European Union have talked about a two-state solution for 30 years, but have only recognized the state of Israel. That's not going to make it happen. The ultimate defeat of Hamas is by making the two-state solution real. It's not a prize to Hamas, because Hamas has never supported the two-state solution. But I think that Ireland would do a good service if not only calling for the recognition of the state of Palestine and recognizing the state of Palestine, but it should also call on all the nations of the world who don't yet recognize the state of Israel to do so. If we're talking about two states, let's be serious about it. There are 139 member states of the UN that recognize the state of Palestine. Ireland is not one of them. There are 165 countries around the world who recognize the state of Israel, but not all of them. There are 193 member states of the UN. Palestine will be number 194, and let's get that done. The veto on Palestinian statehood needs to be removed from Israel.
Dr. Gershon Baskin, Middle East Director of the International Communities Organization, thanks for taking our call. A convicted Garda killer has admitted perverting the course of justice during his murder trial by playing the recording of a witness being interviewed by Gardaí. Aaron Brady, who's serving life with a minimum of 40 years for the murder of Detective Garda Adrian Donoghue 11 years ago, pleaded guilty to the offence at the Special Criminal Court today. Let's get more from our crime correspondent, Paul Reynolds. Tell us first of all about this plea, Paul.
Well, Brian, the case has been adjourned for the past number of days here at the Special Criminal Court while lawyers for both sides discussed and consulted in relation to the case. And today we were told that Aaron Brady could be rearraigned. So he stood in the dock of the Special Criminal Court just before midday as the charge was read out to him. The 33-year-old admitted perverting the course of justice by recording the playing of a video of a witness, Ronan Flynn, being interviewed by the Gardaí on a date unknown between February the 20th of 2020 and May the 7th of 2020. A second charge of conspiring to persuade prosecution witness Daniel Cahill not to give evidence in order to pervert the course of justice between the 8th of April 2020 and the 22nd of June 2020 was taken into account. Now, Brady was on trial at the time for the murder of Detective Garda Adrian Donoghue, who was shot dead at the Lordship Credit Union in January of 2013. The trial was the longest in the history of the state, at the end of which Brady was convicted of the capital murder and sentenced to life in prison with a minimum of 40 years. Now, the trial of his co-accused in this case, 30-year-old Dean Byrne from Cabra Park in Fisborough in Dublin, is due to begin this afternoon.
His defence counsel, Brady's defence counsel, made an application, Paul, to have details of this plea not reported. What happened in relation to that?
Yeah, Aaron Brady didn't want the fact that he had pleaded guilty reported or the details of the evidence in this case. And that's because he's appealing his murder conviction, and his counsel, Michael O'Higgins, submitted that if he were to win, there would be a retrial, possibly before a jury, which could be influenced by reporting of this case. And he said there was a legal precedent for the Special Criminal Court to make such an order, not only preventing the media reporting the facts of this case, but also if the case had, was to be listed before the Supreme Court up until the time that the case would be listed before the Supreme Court. Now, the state opposed the order. Senior Counsel Lorcan Staines said that these concerns were remote because he said for it to be real, it required the conviction to be overturned, first of all, by the Court of Appeal. It was based on the assumption that a retrial would be heard by a jury, and also upon the assumption that jurors would disobey any direction from the trial judge not to conduct research into the case. Mr. Staines also said there was significant amounts of material in relation to Aaron Brady and the background to the case and the charges already in the public domain, and that had been reported by legitimate and responsible news organisations. He also said there had been very significant amounts of public comments by the Brady family in other courts and this court on the day before the sentencing. He said there was an online campaign which had been commenced and conducted by Tony Brady, who's Aaron Brady's father. He said it featured his mother, his sisters, and many other people on various social media platforms. He said transcripts of the trial, the murder trial, had been published by the Brady family, including references to witnesses before the Central Criminal Court. He said publication took place in conjunction with vitriolic comment on witnesses. In particular, he said two witnesses on this indictment in relation to this case. The senior counsel described this as personal, scandalous, and vitriolic commentary. He said there had been vitriolic commentary towards lawyers, the Gardaí, and the trial judge in the murder case, the now retired Mr. Justice White. He pointed out that Tony Brady had been excluded from the Special Criminal Court in another case by Mr. Justice Tony Hunt. Now, at this point this morning, Tony Brady, Aaron's father, stood up to speak, but the presiding judge, Mr. Justice Burns, told him that he had no audience in the court, but he did offer senior counsel Michael O'Higgins, who was representing his son Aaron Brady, the opportunity to hear what Mr. Brady had to say and to put it to the court, but Aaron Brady's legal team declined that opportunity. Now, the prosecuting counsel, Lorcan Staines, also said that very many hours had been spent suggesting a state conspiracy against Aaron Brady in relation to these charges, and he said it was ironic, as this court would be now sentencing him in on these charges. He also said the idea that legitimate reporting by professional and responsible journalists could possibly prejudice potential jurors at a potential future trial is, quote, fanciful. And in the context of the vast amount of material already published by the Brady family, it could not be any way further from the type of exceptional case that would allow the court to stray away from the Constitution.
Very good.
So the court rose, the three judges considered the application, and Mr. Justice Paul Burns came back and said the Constitution mandates that justice be administered in public, and the court was not satisfied that this was an exceptional case, and we have been permitted to publish the details of this case today.
Very good. Paul Rennes, crime correspondent, thanks for that. Sinn Féin has accused the government of underfunding cancer services. Yesterday, the Irish Cancer Society said no additional funding was delivered for the National Cancer Strategy this year and that it was leading to worse outcomes for patients. Speaking of the Doyle, Piers Doherty said radiation equipment was also not in use because of staff shortages.
Your government deliberately made a choice in the budget to underfund the service as you have done in previous years. 5 out of the last 7 years. As the CEO of the Irish Cancer Society said, and she was absolutely right when she said this, without funding, the National Cancer Strategy is a plan without action. And a plan without action is not a plan, it is just words. And words are no comfort to somebody languishing on a waiting list for a cancer test, getting more worried day by day. So can I ask you these questions, Taoiseach? Will you reverse your disastrous budget, the decision that you consciously made not to provide the 20 million that the HSE required to meet the needs of the cancer strategy? Will you reverse that decision as a starting point? What are you going to do to ensure that vital radiation equipment is not lying idle in hospitals across the state?
In response, Taoiseach Micheál Martin said the government had invested very significantly in cancer services over the past 4 years and mortality rates had dropped.
Since this government came to power, we've provided very significant increased allocations to the HSE. And it comes to stage two, Deputy. You know, I think it's an extra 7.7 billion extra on the 2019 figure has been provided to health. So just because the HSE or any agency comes in and says, we want X, is it your policy that you give everything that people ask for and you don't ask about value for money, for efficiency?
Efficiency.
Or you don't ask. Hear me out a second.
The equipment's lying.
Hear me out a second, please.
It's lying.
Hear me out a second. I'm talking about numbers. We've dramatically increased the number of people employed. In fact, the HSE could not recruit the numbers of people, the numbers of people that were provided for in successive funding.
The Taoiseach is speaking in the Doyle a little while ago. Well, let's talk now to Professor Michael Kieran, who is Director of the Cancer Programme for the West and Northwest. He's on the line. Very good afternoon to you, Professor Kieran, and thank you for taking our call this afternoon.
Good afternoon, Brian.
These concerns raised by the Irish Cancer Society yesterday on foot of what they say was no increase in funding for the National Cancer Strategy this year, echoed by opposition parties as we heard there in the Doyle today, are they correct? Are cancer services underfunded as a result of that?
Well, I think providing cancer care remains a challenge, like providing all healthcare across the country at the moment. We have significant infrastructure and staffing problems in cancer programs throughout the cancer centres. But I think it's worthwhile saying that our Ireland has improved greatly as a country, mainly down to the formation of the National Cancer Control Programme and the centralisation of cancer services, which have been going on now since 2006. Notwithstanding that, we have ongoing major challenges.
And are the challenges principally in areas of retention, of recruitment and retention, in, for example, what we heard there with regard to radiology?
Yeah, I think the twin challenges really are infrastructure and staffing. And that's kind of, fairly common sense. You know, we have big challenges. Like, we've moved to an 8 cancer centre model. 4 of the cancer centres are in Dublin. And here in Galway, we have the cancer centre that's providing care to the entire region of Connacht, Donegal, and indeed out into the Midlands and Midwest for common services like breast check and prostate. So in order to have an appropriate infrastructure to deliver that, we actually need very significant improvement. And we have recently opened the radiation oncology building here, and we have some capacity issues there and funding issues, but we've actually been able to recruit radiation oncology technical people to be able to deliver the care here locally. There are challenges in Dublin, and in general terms, there are very significant challenges with radiography support throughout the country at the moment, to the point of where we need an extra school of radiography, I would say.
Well, we also know that there are pressures across the health system, across the hospital system. To what extent are cancer services competing with other areas of the health service for funding and for staffing and for access to that infrastructure?
Well, you know, all of the cancer centres are located in major general hospitals. So when the emergency programme is the cuckoo in the nest, so when that gets very busy, you know, the cancer programme will get displaced. And we have to fix that. You know, one of the things we've done here in the west of Ireland is we've managed to get the cancer centre for the region, which is a component of the major Model 4 hospital, which we're hoping to get built in the next short term. We've managed to get that on the National Development Plan, and that needs to be delivered. And I believe if we have appropriate infrastructure, we will then be able to provide optimal cancer care. And that involves not having the cancer patient in competition with the emergency patient for care.
Professor Michael Kieran, thanks very much for talking to us on the programme. Now, staying with medical matters, a new national survey which asked bereaved people about care provided to loved ones at the end of their lives has found positive experiences across several areas of care. The National End of Life Survey, the first of its kind, was conducted in partnership between the Health Information and Quality Authority, the HSE, and the Department of Health, following a recommendation of the COVID-19 Nursing Homes Expert Panel. More than 4,500 people who registered a death in the family or a friend between September and December 2022 were invited to take part. We can talk to Tracy O'Carroll, who's Director of Care Experience with HICWA. She's here in the studio. A very good afternoon and welcome to
good
the programme, Tracy. I mean, first of all, before we talk about the main findings of this survey, in terms of what you were trying to find out, what for the people you were talking to represented a good experience, a good end-of-life experience for a loved one?
A good end-of-life experience in terms of facilities, comprised of having your own room, possibly having family facilities so they can, you know, make coffee or tea themselves, having visiting access to visiting at all hours, not just confined to visiting hours, especially in those last few days, the ability to bring in your personal effects and those little mementos are very, very important. And in order to be able to participate in family events where possible, or bring in a pet, all those personal aspects of our lives that we'd like to be involved with.
And most people you surveyed, in terms of those criteria, if you like, said that they had a good or very good experience.
Yes, 89% of people said that they had a good or very good experience in those last months of life. And that's because of the respect and dignity that staff showed their loved one, and the confidence and trust that they had in their healthcare staff. And the healthcare staff provided clear explanations provided to their relative or friends, which is a huge, huge difference when you know and understand the language and the explanations that are put forward. Mm-hmm. Kindness and compassion was a word that was used throughout, especially for those last few days of life. Like, the loved ones really, really appreciated, you know, the fact that this kindness and compassion was shown to their loved one.
You were dealing with situations where people died in hospital, where people died perhaps in a nursing home, or died in their own home. Were there different findings in regard to those different settings?
There were some different findings, but overall, I would say it's clear that we are all using all of these services in the last months and days of life. We may start in the home and move elsewhere to a nursing home, hospice or hospital, and equally for all the other services, you move around. And so coordination of care has come across as an area that really requires improvement. Access to care out of hours is very, very important. In particular, in the home care setting, GPs and public health nurses came across as hugely important, and people really appreciate the support that they give, but it's very difficult to access them out of hours. I would also say support for emotional needs is really important, and we'd like to see more of that.
There was a particularly high level of satisfaction for families whose loved one passed away in a hospice, although I think relatively few, was it maybe 10% of the deaths that you were dealing with were in a hospice setting. Now, are we making enough use of the hospices? Should we have more hospices? Are really hospices the gold standard, if you like, in this?
I think it's a very individual experience, and it depends on your needs. To your last topic, the main illness in this time was cancer, and then followed by dementia and heart conditions. So you need different supports at that time, and the different services can support those. But I definitely think we could look at the practices in hospices and bring them across to the other services where possible, in terms of that single room and the personal effects, etc.
And are there particular lessons for people who are resident of nursing homes? Because one of the findings, I think, was that families preferred that somebody would pass away in the nursing home. It is their home rather than in a hospital.
That's a very good point, Brian, and it comes to what are we going to do with these findings. And I suppose you mentioned that the National Care Experience Programme is a partnership between the Health Information and Quality Authority, the Health Service Executive and the Department of Health, and each of us will take those findings and use them. So the Health Information and Quality will use them in developing standards and guidance. Department of Health will use them for policy and national legislation, and the HSC have published their response today on yourexperience.ie. We've also seen on yourexperience.ie that Nursing Homes Ireland and Calecare have committed to supporting their members to take on the learnings from this and to improve their services. And I should say the Irish Hospice Foundation have been a huge support to this survey throughout, and they very much plan to include the findings in their strategy for the years ahead.
Very good. Tracy O'Carroll from Hickwood, thanks very much for talking to us. Back with more after this short break.
Call us at on Clare Lach Cianish Bota Gut. Tossin and Thurs Wigan Glehe Cianish. Come on, Salava. On Bus Lawn the Rogery. Cordis a Hochu of Variga Joe. A Clachta Dun Vail Trial Gwelga Erin Flea. Cada Rinatu and Dera Shachtana Shah. And Dera Shachtana Shahate. Cada Yenin Tu Gach Dera Shachtana. On Wirin or Fada Goira. Marisain Fragra Kena Agonie. Ig Immert Kogiachta. Is he the nomad yoga a varan or fag de heel? Cravekilm, Yanurk, Mogirte, Electric Ireland, is Gail Murray.
When you live in a country that can deliver four seasons in one day, the paintwork on the outside of your home has to work especially hard. Luckily, Fleetwood's weatherclad masonry paint is formulated to meet the weathering challenges of our unique climate. Crafted using the highest quality ingredients by master mixers in our Cavan factory, Fleetwood paint delivers rich colours that resist the harshest Irish weather. It's no wonder Fleetwood Paints has been a trusted Irish brand for nearly 75 years.
RTE Radio 1.
The Black Keys, live in concert. Three Arena Dublin, Friday, May 3rd.
Baby, I'm howling by you.
Tickets available now from Ticketmaster.ie. The Black Keys, live at Three Arena. Tickets available now.
Music updates on RTE Radio 1.
Hello again. You're listening to the news at one. It's almost 6 months since Storm Babette saw hundreds of homes and businesses severely flooded in parts of County Cork after more than a month's rainfall fell in less than 24 hours. The town of Middleton was one of the worst affected as premises were swamped with floodwaters and its main street was impassable for a time. Well, this evening, the town's Chamber of Commerce is unveiling a new brand and website to try to help Middleton move on from the damage inflicted by the storm and to attract new business. Before we came on air, we spoke to Middleton businesswoman and member of the Chamber of Commerce, Niamh Hegarty, who began by telling me about the difficulties faced by businesses since the floods.
When the floods hit in late October, the biggest business concern that everyone had was Christmas. So a lot of the businesses did whatever they could to get their business doors open in the rush to the Christmas period so that they wouldn't miss out on the trade. But what that meant was that what they really did was they plastered over their problems. So a lot of businesses then, come January, had to close their doors in order to make the required refurbishments or, you know, replace equipment or replace damaged goods. And so that meant that January was a really tough month for a lot of businesses because they were investing heavily and then also were impacted by the loss of trade that they experienced prior to Christmas. So I would say at the moment, probably 80% of businesses have made it back open. We did lose a few, unfortunately, that decided to not reopen. It's probably about 5% of the businesses. And then I'd say about 80% have now opened, but a lot of them had to go under significant refurbishment, entirely, like new floors, new equipment, replace everything within their premises, which as a small business, which a lot of the businesses on the main street are, it can be like detrimental really when you are a small business.
And in doing all that work, it must also be the case that in the back of your minds is a fear that this could happen again. I mean, we had a very big storm over the weekend. Presumably you're thinking, are we facing yet another episode?
Exactly. And I think what it is, you never think something like this will happen. And it did happen. So now businesses and the people that own these businesses have experienced the worst case scenario. And it was so unexpected that any time it rains now, or any time there's a murmur of a storm, even like the one that we just had, people are constantly living in fear that the exact same thing is going to happen. And they've just invested, some of them have invested over 100,000 back into their businesses, which luckily nothing did happen. If that had have repeated again at the weekend, we potentially would not see businesses reopen.
Yeah, and of course, as you've been saying, some businesses haven't reopened and are unlikely to do so.
Yes, and look, it's been really challenging for a lot of them, but I suppose it is a very resilient business community down here, and there are businesses that have legacy. They've been, you know, operating through generations. So I think that's also what's quite brilliant about Middleton, is that there is this legacy of business and keeping that community and community business alive. So, which fortunately has meant that businesses did reopen when potentially in other areas they might not have.
And Middleton, of course, is a town that in recent years has expanded considerably and under, I think, Cork's county plan would be expected to grow again very significantly in the years ahead.
There's a huge plan, I suppose, Cork county-wide, but specifically for Middleton, the current population as it stands is about 14,000. That was based off the last census figures, and they expect that it's going to surpass 21,000 by 2028. Which is a huge growth for this area, which means that Middleton really is going to be at the heart of East Cork and, you know, will be a place for commerce and economic growth. And it's really important that we do keep that spirit alive because we want to be able to facilitate that growth.
So this new branding, the website that goes with it, which has been unveiled this evening, what message are you hoping that will convey?
Really what we want is to redefine the narrative of Middleton. Obviously, we want to ensure that the flood defence and the flood relief stays top of conversation because it is so important. But we want to highlight that Middleton is a vibrant and resilient community, and we want to be able to boost the commerce that we see already and, you know, improve it. And also to attract, you know, further investment to drive the tourism in the locality. And the idea of developing a brand for Middleton and also a website, which will work as a kind of a directory style website, means that we'll have tools that can attract this attention and interest, like locally as well as internationally.
And that's Niamh Hegarty from the Middleton Chamber of Commerce. New figures from the Central Statistics Office show that the annual rate of inflation here slowed to 2.9% in March, down from a rate of 3.4% in February. March marked the fifth consecutive month when the inflation rate was lower than 5%. Meanwhile, the European Central Bank, the ECB, has just announced, as expected, that it's keeping Eurozone interest rates unchanged for the moment. Dr. Loretta O'Sullivan is economist with EY. She's here with the studio. Welcome to the programme, Dr. O'Sullivan. Thanks for coming into us. So first of all, this decision by the ECB to leave rates unchanged, but I think the expectations are still that perhaps by June we could start to see interest rates coming down.
Yeah, that's the case, Brian. So today, the outcome, in line with expectations, the ECB stayed on hold. The headline inflation rate in the Eurozone, that has dipped to 2.4%, and underlying inflation, which strips out energy and food, that's running around the 2.9% mark. But services inflation, which reflects domestic price pressures, that's higher, hovering around 4%. So the Governing Council concluded that we're not there yet. But if we look at what's happening in the Eurozone in terms of growth, it's quite low. The ECB do think that they're going to get back to the 2% target in 2025. So that can be all read as signposts for rate cuts to come. And that's how markets are looking at things. Mm-hmm. They expect that the first cut will come in June. The ECB will be doing a press conference shortly. All eyes will be on that to see if Madame Lagarde's signals June kickoff, and if she says anything about what might happen for the second half of the year.
Yeah, they're saying in their statement, which has just been released, that domestic price pressures are strong and are keeping services price inflation high.
Yes, and that's the 4% number. So they want to see that come down a little bit more. By June, there will be more data available on wages. They have begun to moderate. And if that trend continues, ourselves and markets think then that they'll be in a position to move and the rate cut will come.
Now, what about our figures today? What's happening in terms of price inflation in the Irish economy?
A similar trend in terms of the Irish economy, in that we are seeing disinflation. Inflation is on the retreat. It's coming down. So the number down, the headline number down to 2.9%. But again, we have a similar story in that domestic services inflation is a little bit higher. So it's moving in the right direction for sure. And that's because the energy providers, they're passing through the wholesale, lower wholesale prices in terms of gas and oil being fed through to retail prices. And we're seeing monetary policy work its way through the system. So moving in the right direction. It's fair to say, though, the level of prices is higher than it was before. And that is something that is very relevant for households, and households are still feeling the pain of that. But the rate of increase is easing. That means that there is less of a squeeze on households' disposable income. We do expect wages will increase this year. We do see that Ireland is at record high employment, and all that's positive for households in terms of consumer spending. Mm-hmm. And for businesses, while the cost base is high, if the ECB and when the ECB reduce interest rate cuts, that's going to make for more favourable financing conditions and will be supportive of investment. So economy-wide, it means a pick-up in momentum later this year.
Very good. Dr. Rachel Sullivan from EY, thanks very much for that.
Sport on RTE Radio 1.
And it's a very good afternoon to Andrew O'Connor. Andrew.
And a very good afternoon to you, Brian. Starting with rugby, Cliona Maloney is in line to make her first Ireland appearance since November 2021, with the hooker named among the replacements for Saturday's Guinness Women's Six Nations meeting with Wales in Cork. The Galway native replaces Sarah Delaney on the bench, who misses out with a shoulder injury. The only change to the starting side for the meeting with Wales sees Adele McMahon return to the side at flanker. The co-captain had been left out of the round two defeat to Italy, but comes back in to replace Grace Moore, who misses out on the match day 23. Now, in golf, bad weather has delayed the start of the 88th edition of the Masters. We can get the latest news now from Augusta National with Greg Allen.
Yeah, it's a grey but actually brightening morning now, and while we have a delayed start here this morning due to heavy overnight rain and high winds, the storm that swept across southern US states mostly missed Augusta, so they're fortunate to only have a minimal disruption of 2.5 hours. That means we'll have players on the course from 3:30, and the first Irishman in action will be Rory McIlroy alongside the world number one Scottie Scheffler and the world number five Xander Schauffele, and that trio will now tee off at 6:10 Irish time. Shane Lowry, who tees off at around 5:05 in Irish time, will possibly finish in near darkness, or because he's out near the end of the field, he may not.